Okay. Hey, everyone. This is me, John Gonzalez and Numan Mustafa, and welcome to another episode of our Thursday Tea Podcast. The podcast, so these are completely unscripted, and we invite experts from the cloud industry to candidly share their knowledge and customer learnings, experiences in their cloud journeys, specifically how they're thinking about tackling what I would call the most fundamental but critical cloud networking and security constructs. Today, we're very pleased to have Jason Lagone with us to join us, talk about the government sector, how the government's dealing with and managing the complexities of moving workloads to the cloud. So, hi, Jason, how are you? And I hope you have a
Good
nice cup
afternoon.
of tea at your side there. You can take some sips.
I'm having mine
don't.
right now.
Oh, you guys are good. Yeah, no, I'm not much of a tea drinker unless I'm. You know, I drank tea when I was in Bahrain. I drank tea when I was in Japan a bunch, but I'm a cappuccino
So we're going to convert you. Next time you come on this show, it's tea. So
Sounds
Jason, why
good.
don't you go ahead, give our audience a quick intro, a bit of background on yourself, and then we'll kick off with some questions.
Yeah, sure thing. So, Jason Langoni, I'm was the first Aviatrix Federal hire here, maybe 9, 10 months ago at this point. Prior to joining Aviatrix, I did a 8.5 year run at Nutanix. Was also the first federal hire over there. And then prior to that, I was a government contractor both here in the States. I did a lot of stuff overseas as well.
Great, great. So, Jason, when we think of, or when I think about government, I think they're large complexity, antiquated environments, bureaucratic processes, slow to make decisions, everything's got to be committee run. What are they doing in the cloud? And are they even going to the
That's brutal. Some
cloud?
of that's accurate, clearly. Some of it's required. But I'll say, and it is amazing to see the adoption of cloud by all facets of the U.S. federal landscape, civilian, defense, intelligence. And I think 5, 6 years ago, and Steve Mullaney, our CEO, makes this or made this comment a couple times. It's like 5, 6 years ago, everyone was talking about cloud, and then the enterprise essentially kind of paused on that. Federal government marched right ahead. I mean, a lot of these agencies have been in primarily AWS 5+ years. For me, the reality when we talk cloud to federal agencies, we rarely have to say the term multi-cloud because it's assumed. Everyone's in AWS, they're spinning up something or planning to spin up something very soon in Azure, GCP, talks of Oracle Cloud. So I think federal's ahead. I'll
Right.
stand by that comment.
Great.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. At least in the US. I'm not sure about the UK, but we'll see.
Yeah, I can't speak for you guys.
So I guess, Jason, they're going into public cloud, they're government, they've got to keep segregated to some degree, etc. How are the cloud vendors coping with the unique that sort of unique requirements that the government needs?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, there's a fair amount of consumption in the commercial regions, right? Especially if it's R&D, it's unclassed software development. A lot of that stuff can certainly be prototyped in commercial regions. And then kudos to, the big CSPs. Most of them have spun up multiple GovCloud regions, some CONUS, some here in the States, some all over the world. That's an important checkbox, if you will. And then you've got folks like AWS and Azure and some of these other ones who've instantiated, higher enclaves for people that need to be operating at a more secure level than even a GovCloud region.
Right.
So Jason, what are some of the unique requirements that you have seen from government customers as comparing with the other enterprise customers? And the reason why I ask is, I was talking to the head of a financial investment bank out of New York, and we were talking about other financial customers because I thought that he's a financial customer, but he mentions something very strange. He said that, no, don't give me example of other financials, give me example of government. Because when you're talking about cloud journey, I want to be able to have a very similar requirement infrastructure that government needs, because this is about all classified information. And also what I've also seen working with our global customers, right? A lot of these government agencies and entities, whether it's in Middle East, whether it's in ANZ, they all look for what is US government agency doing, how they are doing the cloud journey. They use them as a reference point. And I'm really happy to see, as you said earlier, right, that the government customers are actually a lot more advanced than some of the enterprise customers. And I've not seen that in the on-prem world, right? In the cloud world, they are very progressive. They're looking to get access to new services that each of the cloud provider is coming from. That's where I think this multi-cloud aspect is coming from, because they want to be able to use the best services available out there. But from your experience, what are some of the unique business needs that are pushing them to leverage these services in each cloud, and how are they different from general enterprise customers?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought. And I will say, you know, my previous company, I got asked to brief enterprise organizations all the time. And clearly we couldn't go into details on a specific mission. And there were plenty of times we couldn't even name the customer. They kind of wanted to hear, like, okay, well, like, how did these agencies overcome this hurdle, or how do they address, or what was their perspective on X, Y, or Z? And as I think there's no surprise to anybody, security is the top of the pyramid. Not just perimeter security, but internal security, the ability to do cyber forensics. US government has top security experts on the planet, right? I mean, and security is how you get things stood up. If you can't pass a security audit, you're never going to be in production. So security clearly is important, encryption, kind of all the facets and components that come with security. And then the other thing I would say that I think, you know, and you guys kind of hit it at the top of this, is massive, right? So, okay, like, you're secure, but can you do it at scale? And scale does not mean the three of us click in and do we check the box? Do we not check the box? Do we lock the doors? Do we not lock the doors? It's auditable code. It's, you know, whether you're doing it through API calls or Terraform or whatever it is, but it's understanding how to be secure and then be secure at scale, which are, you know, two different things for many.
So Jason, just double clicking on that then, you know, even the most basic of security, having your data encrypted at transit, you don't get mm-hmm. that natively. So agencies that are not using Aviatrix, how are they getting away with, or probably they're not getting away, but how are they doing their data in transit?
Yeah, it's a lot of manual IPsec tunnel management. I mean, that's a really good point. And if, you know, I'm pulling up data last week on, like, what's the number one query? What's the number one search on the folks that are inbound that want to talk to us and understand how to overcome, you know, a mission challenge? Encryption performance in the cloud is the number one reason, you know, folks are finding us, which is, you know, honestly, not surprising, right? A lot of these agencies have a mandate that, to your point, traffic communication has to be encrypted. Well, it's encrypted at the sake of performance. It's encrypted mm-hmm. at the sake of user experience, all these things. And people are trying to understand, how can we do it better?
Yeah. Right. Interesting. Yeah.
And I think it's also about layered security. And I've seen this, I've heard this from several application teams, that, you know, we are going to just encrypt it at the application level, right? And you know, I'm talking to a couple of networking architects at some major customers. What they say, that let application team do their job and let us do our job, right? Because if, you know, I'm able to encrypt my traffic at the infrastructure level, I'm not going to depend on application team and bet my job on them. Because at the end of the day, if something breaks and something leaks, something right. breach happens, you know, I have to take ownership. And I think Aviatrix as a platform provides this capability that, you know, if I can encrypt the traffic end to end in motion, for data in motion, then why not? A lot of time people go in, they just do not find this capability, and they try to design things around it, right? Which I think is no longer an excuse anymore, because you have platform, you have capability that people are providing. And also, I think one other thing is visibility, right? And one of the things I've noticed is, in cloud, a lot of things are black boxes, right? For a design, and it's for a reason why it's that, because of the economies of scale, it's being shared by millions of customers. There's no way they can give you access. But the point is that you are guilty unless you prove your innocence. And in those cases, visibility is key part. And we have seen that recently with a customer where, you know, without Copilot, with Aviatrix Copilot, they had a team of 10 engineers who spent 3+ hours to troubleshoot an issue, and they couldn't, which was able to do in just few clicks. Right. So Jason, talk about some of the benefits that your government customers are seeing with just having that eyes and ears and visibility and feel empowered about, yes, they have control over what the traffic is and who they are talking to, and just overall, confidence about managing the environment and data.
Yeah, man, you're spot on. I mean, you know, all this stuff, at least for most regions, all this stuff running in the cloud is in direct proximity to the dirty internet, right? I mean, this stuff is, you know, on the edge of the wild, wild west. And again, kind of to your point, when a breach happens, suspected breach, something slows, something smells funny, whose phone rings? Not the application team. I mean, it might eventually ring down there, but that's not the first call. That's probably not one of the first 10 calls even. The visibility component of Copilot, I mean, we've done briefings that have just been around Copilot. We show a Copilot demo if we've got the ability to in every single briefing. And we talk about, okay, again, the phone rings and maybe it's not a hack, maybe it's not a suspected breach, but stuff is slow. Something's down. Like, tell me how you troubleshoot that. How do you have, you know, your boss, your chain of command quickly gain situational awareness into what's going on? There's no easy way to do that, right? And prior to Copilot, if you've ever been in any of the CSPs, you got Chrome open, you got 45 tabs open, you got 30 terminal sessions going, it's a hot mess. And again, chain of command doesn't want to see that. Like, they want to see something visual, they can quickly grasp what's going on and hand it off to a cyber team if need be. So yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Copilot to me, especially like the new feature with the ability to replay topology changes, I mean, stuff is unparalleled in what we're doing.
It's the poor old network guy that gets called out at 2 a.m., as you say, Jason, before the application guy who may get called at 9 a.m. when it's broad daylight and he or she'd be working anyway.
Second cup of tea.
Yeah. With Copilot now and topology replay, I'd love to be a keyboard engineer again. I can prove it's either me or it's not me. And if it's me, I can trace it back very quickly and rectify it. And if it's not me, get that guy who's the application owner, get him out of bed.
Actually a real problem, right? Because, you know, in talking to a head of vulnerability and threat, detection at one of the major customer here, enterprise customer in US, he says that, you know, I know my game in on-prem world. I know my tools, vendor knows their tool, but as soon as it comes to the cloud, I am like a deer in a headlight, right? And I have no visibility. And if you don't give me visibility, what is my experience around threat detection and vulnerability and security posture? I cannot do that, right? So in a way, I think you need to work with cloud-native platforms, cloud-native plus type platforms that have this visibility, that have this control, that can help you do your job in a better way. So I think, Jason, I completely agree that this is the type of a thing that I think our government customers or public sector customers needs to think outside the box and look for cloud native plus tools and platforms that can help them with their security posturing in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think about when I was a contractor on site, you know, a long time ago now, in our cubicle, we'd have on a massive sheet of paper, printed out the network topology, right? And you'd hang it up on your cube and your phone rings like, hey, Langoni, what's going on? Stuff's slow. And you kind of trace it. Like, things went south when it hit a hop in Kuwait, or things went south when it hit a hop, wherever it might be. How do you do that in the cloud? That's not easy if you don't have a tool. For those that were doing cyber stuff and used to tools like Wireshark, how do you export PCAP data, let alone multi-cloud PCAP data, and fire it up for analysis, or understand quickly, you know, a flow from this instance in this region to that instance in that region. I mean, cloud's complicated. I mean, there's a lot of great benefits of it, but when you look at the connectivity and where connectivity is going for all these agencies, stuff gets very complex.
It does make you wonder, without Aviatrix, and we simplify things, and it's still complicated, right? But we simplify things a hell of a lot. How on earth are people coping just going native? You know, how are they doing it? It must be a miracle, or they're not doing it, or they're doing it very badly, right?
Or they're in, common scenario. Someone's been in AWS. All the personnel is AWS certified, AWS whiz bangs. All their scripts are tied to AWS. And that's great, right? They're doing it through scripts or they're doing it manual, and they have a high level of comfort. But we all know the reality now is at some point, someone way up the food chain is going to say, go spin up directory services in Azure. Let's at least test it. Let's take a look at Looker, AutoML. Let's get the Oracle team to migrate. No one's going to go learn all these other clouds and the limitations and the vernacular and how you connect it, let alone how you're going to pass a security audit. I think that's when people go out and they start Googling and looking for, you know, what's out there.
Yeah. I think the skill gap and skill ramp up is a big pain point. What I've seen is people have a fresh person who you ask them to go and learn cloud, they will learn AWS and maybe 50% of Azure, and they feel comfortable about it. But maybe, as soon as you start to look in the third cloud, they say, no way, we can't do it. And I think this is something that Oracle is finding it difficult now, because they are either the third or fourth in the race, and they're saying that nobody wants to learn Oracle. And they want abstraction, they want simplicity. And at the same time, every Azure customer, or most of the Azure customers, or even AWS customers, would want to go and access Oracle Autonomous Databases that they may have on-prem and they're moving to the cloud. So this, from infrastructure team perspective or cloud networking team perspective, they need to be able to address the business requirements and making sure that they are able to provide this secure connectivity to all of the services in any cloud. Right? So whether it's a 5% workload or 10% workload, your architecture needs to still be the same, right? Because you know, that availability, that security, that segmentation needs to be there, whether you have 20% workload or 50% workload in the cloud. So that's a very genuine, I would say, concern for many infrastructure providers. And they are looking for having this common architecture that, in a way, Vitrix provide. And I actually have one CIO who commented that common, single, repeatable architecture across multiple regions in cloud is the juice right there that most of the enterprises are looking for. So is that what you're seeing, Jason, as well? In are they in all clouds? Are they start with one cloud, or they have a multi-cloud strategy? Or what do government customers think about the cloud?
Yeah, I mean, they're all pretty much multi-cloud, or they'll be multi-cloud this year if they're not. I don't think that's anything unknown at this point. And a lot of them have a cloud team and they're AWS savvy, as we mentioned, and they've got to learn something else. Some cases, there's an AWS team and an Azure team. And I think, kind of to your point, this kind of wrapping your head around trying to learn all these other clouds is one of the reasons ACE, our certified engineer, kind of training curriculum, I think it has taken off like crazy. I mean, I took it before I joined this company, a year ago. And to me, and I know you guys had a great podcast with Dana was on it and Hamad was on it, man. And I resonated with it 100%. 15, 20 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be early in like VMware, right? And that's a reality of it. Changed my financial trajectory, changed my career trajectory. And here we are in cloud. We now know it's not just going to be one cloud. So that AWS cert is valuable, but what's going to span everything? So to me, personnel, the folks I'm working with, they're all pumped on ACE. I don't know what we're at now, 12,000 or something. Because they recognize this stuff's complicated. It doesn't make sense to go get Novell certified, MCSE, and all these other things. Like, what's something that's common, much like virtualization was common back then?
Jason, do you see the government using Aviatrix in any unique way when compared to our traditional type customers? When I say traditional enterprises, wherever, retail, financial. It's any special things that we're doing for governments that we're not doing for anyone else?
You guys would have to keep me honest, because I can't say I'm fully read in on, maybe everything the enterprise is doing. But I will say zero trust initiatives, which are, gaining steam or already underway within federal government. We're getting included in those. DevSecOps. And if you think of who went to the cloud first, primarily software developers, then the enterprise and security and auditing and compliance came along and it started taking a look. DevSecOps initiatives are massive within the federal government. I would imagine a lot of that stuff ties over in enterprise. And then the last one is cyber. Every agency has some cyber component. Sometimes it's offensive, sometimes it's defensive, sometimes it's both. But again, cyber, a big piece of cyber is visibility. It's intelligence of the transit. It's intelligence of the communication. And how would you do that in a multi-cloud world without something like Aviatrix?
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Yeah. That's great. Jason, maybe how about we leave our audience with three key takeaways based on your learning, working with government customers, something that they can take away listening to this podcast?
Sure. Maybe I'll distill it down into into maybe one thought, larger thought. We all know the value of high performance encryption and multi-cloud network architecture, visibility, third-party firewall management. I think that value people understand, especially if they've watched any of these podcasts at this point. I was having a conversation, it's probably 4 months ago now, with a gentleman at an agency. And he said, look, we get all of these immediate values that come and these capabilities from Aviatrix. But for me as a government customer, I know Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Oracle are all competing for my cloud business every single day. And the way they compete is not by lowering the cost of compute by a cent or half a cent an hour. It's through innovation. It's by developing new innovative cloud services that this agency or any agency would want to build a capability around. So, you know, this gentleman kind of went on to say, having the ability to easily tap into, connect, build prototypes around these services across all of the major CSPs is a huge strategic advantage, drastically reduces time to mission. And for them, they view Aviatrix as a big strategic shift for them, purely based on the fact that they can tap into that innovation race, which, I mean, I thought it was brilliant. Like, I wrote it down and I've repeated a few times over now, but I think we all get like the pain points that Aviatrix solves, especially again, if you've watched any of these, you've read any of the collateral, but you think big picture, to me, that's a pretty, pretty powerful statement.
Yeah.
That's great. Absolutely agree.
I'll use that.
Yeah.
That is very good. I will use that.
All right. This is great.
Thank you very much. Been really interesting.
Thank you, Jason. Yeah. Thank you, John. Really appreciate it. Very good learning.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye.